Chapter 4, 0729 Hours. Nobody said anything for a while. Porter felt the temperature inside the soundproofed room plummet. Silence filled the air. March sparked up another tab and watched the operators carefully, like she was trying to gauge their reactions. Finally, Porter broke the silence.
If you're so worried about Soames, why don't you just tell him to hop on a plane?
Two reasons. March took a puff of her cigarette, then propped it on the side of the ashtray. Smoke drifted lazily towards the foam-covered ceiling. One, the situation on the ground is increasingly unstable. We have unconfirmed reports of armed groups sympathetic to the rebels already inside Freetown. That makes any Westerner a potential target. We're advising all British nationals inside the city to stay indoors unless absolutely necessary. If Soames tries to check out of the country alone, he might run into trouble, especially since he's a close friend of President Fofana, which makes him a sworn enemy of the RUF.
Bald said,
What about a military evacuation? All them other expats will need rescuing if the country goes to shit. Get them to bail the old bastard out.
It's on the agenda.
Hawkridge took off his horn-rimmed glasses and rubbed his tired eyes.
But it's a question of time. We have no ships in the area, and the nearest troops are over in Senegal.
He set the glasses back on the ridge of his long nose.
It will be a couple of days before we can mobilize a force to evacuate British nationals. At least, by then, it might be too late.
Porter said,
What's the second reason?
We've tried contacting Ronald several times since we learned of the threat, March replied, but there's no answer at his company offices.
What about his gaff? Bald asked.
Same thing, no answer.
It's possible that the comms are down, Hawkridge added. They're unreliable at the best of times, or Soames might be trapped somewhere else in the city.
Wherever he is, March cut in. We have no way of reaching out to warn him of the Russian threat.
Isn't there anyone else on the ground locally? Porter said. Someone who can make a run across town and knock on his door?
Hawkridge said, Unfortunately not. The only local resources we have are the staff of the British High Commission. It's a skeletal staff. As you can imagine, they're swamped dealing with expats trying to get out of the country. Even if we could spare somebody to warn Ronald, it doesn't solve the problem of getting him on a plane without running into a team of armed Russians. Locating Soames is only half the problem. Once you find him, you're going to have to watch his back closely. He shrugged. For all we know, the Russians are already inside Freetown.
Besides, said March, it's not just a question of protecting Soames. It's about safeguarding the national interest.
Bald furrowed his brow. How's that?
March said, Ronald is practically a Whitehall institution. He spent 20 years at the forefront of the MOD and is well versed in matters of national security. If the Russians get to him, there's a serious risk that they might interrogate him and find out what he knows.
Porter said, You're afraid he'd spill his guts?
It's a concern.
March paused and smoked some more.
Even if he didn't talk, his capture or death would be highly embarrassing. Soames is a man with plenty of friends. He's on first-name terms with members of the royal family, not to mention several politicians and high-ranking public officials. If anything happened to him, it would reflect badly on his associates. Needless to say, those people are keen to make sure that he is returned safely to London.
March paused and levelled her gaze at Porter.
Very keen.
Porter listened and nodded. He could picture the headlines splashed all over the front pages of the Red Tops. A top international fixer with links to the Windsor set on a questionable mission in Sierra Leone being executed by a bunch of savage guerrillas. The media would have a field day. Fair enough, he said. So the old boys' network is shitting bricks, and they want us to rescue one of their own. But how are we supposed to find Soames?
Try the office first,
Hawkridge replied stiffly. "It's a more secure location than his apartment, and there's a guest room on the ground floor. It's quite possible Soames might be there, waiting this whole thing out."
"And if he isn't?"
"There's a houseboy based at the office, a young fellow called Vandy. If Soames has gone off somewhere, he might be able to point you in the right direction. In the meantime, we'll keep trying to reach him from our end."
"You'll have to move fast," March said. "The situation in Sierra Leone is getting worse by the hour. The latest intelligence reports indicate that we have 48 hours until the rebels mount an attack on Freetown. Maybe less. You'll need to land, locate Soames, and extract him before the city falls."
"What if Soames has already bugged out of Freetown?" Bold said. "He might have seen the way things are going and decided to leg it."
"Unlikely," Hawkridge replied, with a sharp wave of his hand. "Most of the territory outside Freetown is held by the rebels. They've got checkpoints all over the place. Even if Soames did manage to avoid the rebels, there's still the risk of running into the West Side boys."
I've heard of them," said Bald. "Bunch of shoggy crackheads who dress like poofters."
Hawkridge grimaced. "That's certainly one way of putting it. The West Side boys aren't aligned with any of the rebel factions. Their leader is a fellow by the name of Brigadier Fode Calais. He's a big fan of rape, looting and murder. Most of their soldiers were abducted as children and forced to torture or kill as part of their initiation. They dress in women's wigs and flip-flops to intimidate the enemy, and they're permanently drugged up on marijuana and heroin."
"Sounds like a Friday night in Brixton," said Porter.
"Don't be fooled. The West Side boys are volatile and dangerous. 2 months ago, Calais' men entered a village south of Freetown and rounded up anyone suspected of collaborating with the government. 23 men, women and children in total. They took them down to a pit and executed them one by one. Trust me, Soames won't have left the city. Not with the West Side boys running amok in the countryside."
Porter listened in silence. His hands had started to shake. He was half tuned in to the briefing, half tuned in to the voice in the back of his head, the one that told him he badly needed a drink. Just a little while longer, Porter told himself. He grabbed his right hand in his left and stilled it. Hawkridge clasped his hands together.
"Questions, gentlemen?"
"What about weapons?" Porter said.
Hawkridge made a sucking sound with his teeth. "I can't help you there, old fruit. We can't get you clearance to take guns aboard a commercial flight, not without going through the official channels, and we'd prefer to have as few people as possible know about this operation, for obvious reasons."
Porter glanced at his mucker. Bald looked incensed. His brow creased into a deep frown, the muscles on his neck strained like tensed rope.
"What are we supposed to do if we bump into the Russians?" he growled.
"Forage and supply yourself locally. You'll just have to be resourceful," Hawkridge smiled. "Isn't that what you Hereford chaps are supposed to be good at, fending for yourselves?"
Bald made no attempt to mask his anger.
"Fucking great. So we've got to rescue some old Rupert in the middle of a coup, and now we're going in half-cocked as well. This op just keeps getting better."
The briefing room descended into another bout of silence. Hawkridge stared down the barrel of his nose at the two regiment men.
"If you have misgivings about the mission, now is the time to say so. You can walk away from the mission if you prefer. I'll see to it that you spend the next 2 years on secondment as PSIs instead. Your call."
Porter tensed and felt a wave of anger surge up inside him. Permanent staff instructors were the guys in charge of the TA units. There could be no greater shame for a regiment man than having to bark orders at a bunch of weekend warriors for the next 2 years. Porter looked across at his mucker, could tell he was thinking the same thing. Lifting some ex-Rupert out of an African hellhole might be a crap mission, but it's still better than being posted as a PSI.
"Fine," he said to Hawkridge. "We'll do it."
Hawkridge relaxed his face into a slight smile. "You'll fly out today," he went on. "This afternoon, in fact.
We've booked you in on the next available flight from Heathrow to Freetown. Once you land, you'll be greeted by a local handler, a fellow by the name of Mike Shoemaker. He'll be waiting for you at the airport. He's got your descriptions. Ah, which reminds me.
The agent slid out of his chair, paced over to the AMSEC safe at the back of the room, and punched in a 6-digit code on the backlit keypad. The safe made a bunch of whirring and clunking noises. Then Hawkridge cranked the heavy door open and retrieved a set of documents from the top shelf, plus a dark green Motorola satellite phone the size of a brick with a long black aerial as thick as a tube of Smarties. He dumped the items on the desk in front of Bald and Porter.
"For your travels," he said. "I think you'll find that everything is in order."
Porter reached for the set of documents. There were 2 business-class tickets for a British Airways flight from London to Lungi International Airport at 13:55 hours, with a stopover in Morocco. The return portions of the tickets were open-ended. There was a 3rd ticket in the name of Ronald Soames, also in business class. Along with the tickets, there were 4 bands of cash, 2 thick ones in lions, the local currency, and 2 smaller wads of US dollars. Porter picked up a couple and thumbed them. He counted 500 in $20 bills in the US bundle and 250,000 in the Lyon one. A total of $1,000 in Yank currency, and roughly the same again in the local coinage. Probably not a lot to a guy like Soames, Porter thought. Probably less than the bloke earned in a day.
"Walking around money," Hawkridge explained. "You'll need it. You can't get anything done out there without greasing a few palms. Bribery is the 2nd biggest industry in Sierra Leone, after diamonds. But try not to blow the lot. This isn't some government jolly we're sending you on."
"Sure," Porter said, grinning. "We'll just ask the rebels for receipts."
Hawkridge made a face. Then he pointed to the sat phone.
"Iridium Motorola 9500. There's a UK number stored on the SIM card. Call it, and you'll be put through to a secure line over at Vauxhall. As this is an overseas affair, Angela and I will be liaising with 6 on this operation. Contact us once you've located Soames. The battery only lasts for 16 hours on standby, although I doubt you'll be on the ground for much longer than that. Understood?"
Both men nodded. Then Hawkridge stood up and glanced at his watch.
"It's 7:45, chaps. We're already on the clock. A driver will pick you up at 10 o'clock sharp and drop you at the airport."
He buttoned up his jacket.
"Now, unless you have any further questions?"
Bald and Porter looked at one another. Porter turned back to Hawkridge and shook his head.
"Good. Then I suggest you both leave and pack your bags."
The 2 operators stood up simultaneously and turned to leave. Then Hawkridge cleared his throat. Bald and Porter both looked inquiringly at their handler.
"A word of warning," Hawkridge said. "A lot of people are desperate to make sure that Ronald stays out of trouble. People higher up the food chain than us. There's more at stake here than the diamond mines inside Sierra Leone. Ronald is a high-value asset. If the Russians get to him first, our past operations involving him will be at risk of being exposed. Operations we prefer to remain secret. Do whatever it takes to get him out of Freetown. Am I clear?"
"Yeah," Porter replied tersely. "Crystal."
"Good."
There was a hard look in Hawkridge's eyes. But there was something else there, too, thought Porter. Something unexpected. A cold blue glimmer of fear.
"If you fuck up, heads are going to roll inside Whitehall, and I'll make damn sure that yours will be the first ones on the block."